Welcome, everybody, to the, I think, 9th or 10th episode of the Mod Pod. I don't even know anymore. I can't keep up. We are back after a long pause due to some mental, just a mental break from it all. The QAnon thing kind of drove me crazy, and I did a lot of research, and I just needed a break. So, Paul, I appreciate you coming back and diving back into this clusterfuck that is American politics.
Yeah, it's good to actually be able to record the show again from D.C., so I'm already back in the city.
You're back. You are not getting any kind of retro pay or anything like that because you were not on the ground during the insurrection, and therefore you cannot be a key witness in the biggest sham in American history.
And no reimbursement for travel costs.
Nah, bro. I'm not giving you anything. Matter of fact, gas prices went up, so you're definitely not getting compensated.
I took the train.
Today's episode is brought to you by Twitter, which is now proving that they are, in fact, a liberal breeding ground. So I will apologize to all my conservative, ultra-conservative, far-right, far-right folks and say, you know, you are absolutely right. Twitter is just an echo chamber for liberals. Who knew? They got one right, Paul. They got one right.
Yes. I was going to say, because taking the Twitter accounts away from all the people who supported the insurrection, it's totally the same thing. It's because we supported Trump. No, it's because you committed a crime. And you used Twitter to coordinate the carrying out of said crime.
Yeah, I actually don't have an issue necessarily with that. I know some people, like, we live in a time where basically any kind of accountability is considered an infringement on your rights, it, depending on who you're talking to. So I don't really have an issue with them, quote unquote, censoring certain people, because if you look at the terms and liability and the terms and conditions of most of the social media platforms, there is some language in there that they can be held liable to some degree if they don't monitor exactly what gets posted on their platform per se. So in that case, if people are using, let's say, Twitter or Facebook to coordinate activities like what happened during the insurrection, I feel like they kind of have they have a duty as a company to deter that kind of behavior. And if that means deleting your account, even if you're the president, so be it.
Yeah, I don't really think a good look for a good, you know, Twitter tagline, at least for the way to sell why you should be on Twitter. It's like, hey, Twitter, we'll connect you to everybody, even people you want to coordinate insurrections with. Not now, really going to be a look for a business model.
Not to be lost on the controversy of free speech. Today, we lost a conservative juggernaut in Rush Limbaugh. I don't have anything positive or glowing to say about Rush Limbaugh. However, I will say that if you do believe in the First Amendment and you do believe in the idea that in America you can be anything you want to be, even if people don't like you or agree with what you say, then Rush is your guy. I mean, you can't take away what he's accomplished in his profession, even if it's marred with a lot of controversy. And I'm pretty sure the last thing he wanted to do was pass away in Black History Month, but here we are.
Well, I think it's always interesting to whenever you have somebody like this die. And when I say somebody like this, I mean somebody where the legacy that they left behind isn't necessarily a great one for a lot of people. And I feel like humans, when it comes to having to constantly face the reminders that, you know, of our own mortality, that ultimately at some point, you know, you and me, our number is going to get called eventually. We just don't know when. And having, you know, that reminders of famous people who died, there's always this thing we do where you know, were almost hesitant, I want to say, in certain ways to immediately dig into everybody or anything and everything that this guy did wrong. You know, you see that like with, you know, Antonin Scalia when he died, although granted he wasn't necessarily obviously as controversial as Rush Limbaugh, he was still a bit of a polarizing figure in his own ways during his whole career as a jurist, was the way he interpreted the Constitution, the opinions that he issued, and some of the stances that he took, and especially for a lot of his conservative values. And, you know, I think, I mean, obviously with Rush, it's a little bit easier because, I mean, just reading on some of the things that he did, I mean, he was having stuff go viral before, you know, like the internet was really able to make things go viral. Like he was unbelievable at being able to get that kind of attention, not in a good way. But I think when it comes to people like this, like you said, and I think like someone who, you know, you and I were talking about on the IBS network, had mentioned it, that you can recognize the impact that somebody had and be at least impressed with how far they came. In his case, from some, I think he was like some low-level employee for the Kansas City Royals, all the way up to a guy who essentially revolutionized the way political radio and that kind of political commentary is handled. But you have to, you can separate the fact that it's like, you know, it, you know, rec, you know, at least coming to terms with the fact that he died and coming with that reminder, but also saying, guys, ultimately, your legacy is the things that you say and the things that you do, and that doesn't change. Who you are on the inside as a human being is only valuable insofar as what it forces you to do. And in his case, as much as he revolutionized things, the legacy that he leaves behind is one that alienated a lot of groups and embarrassed and insulted a lot of groups in the country, who have been marginalized and insulted for a very long time. So we have to, like, you have to come to terms with that.
If I die before you, I want you to eulogize me, because that was just a very poetic way of saying that this guy is an asshole and we're not going to miss him.
I figured that might have been the best way to tap dance around.
Yeah, that. Man. I mean, that was, I thought that was well done. I mean, for real, definitely. And you know, I don't have anything to say about Rush. I wish him the best in his next life. And that's about it. So we'll do a moment of silence for Rush. And we're back. So speaking of Rush Limbaugh, Trump made his debut back onto, I guess, major news networks. It was Fox and OAN, ONN, or I don't know what they call it, OAN. And I forgot the other network that he was on, Newsmax. So he's still talking about the fraudulent election. He added a new wrinkle into it this time. He talked about the massive fraud. He said Rush, rest in peace. He had glowing words for Rush, which he should. And he said that Rush knew that he won and told him that he thought he won. And then the wrinkle that I haven't heard yet, he said that, you know who's really mad about all this? Right now, Hillary Clinton, because Hillary's sitting at home wondering, why didn't they cheat for me? Why didn't they give me more votes? Why didn't they add more votes for me in Michigan and all these other states that I lost? That was what he said. So I'm coming to grips with the fact that this will never go away for as long as Donald Trump lives and breathes. The 2020 election will be a fraud. How can somebody say that, believe that, and then turn around and want to run again? I don't know if it's true that he wants to run, but how could he come back? Let's think 4 years from now or 3 years from now. It's 2024. God help us all if Trump is still here. But it's 2024, and he's running for president again. What do you say to everybody when you call a system fraudulent and you re-enter into a contest in that same system? If you don't win, is it still fraudulent again? Like, what if you do win and people spin it back on you and say, oh, they added votes for Trump? Like, how does he get around this?
Well, first off, I got to say, with the way that he was bringing that whole thing in while he's supposed to be talking about Rush Limbaugh, I don't know why I got the vibe for this, but all I can keep thinking is the Kevin Hart bit when his cousin got up, and I guess at his mother's funeral, and like the first thing he did was talk about how before she died, she owed him money. Like, it felt like such a completely, like, it's like, you're, like, come on, man. Like, really? Like, this is the time you're still going to peddle this stuff, like, when you're supposed to be talking about him? Like, that's why you were calling in, but I digress. I was going to say, I think with the thing with Trump that you have to remember is that he is, I mean, and with so many of the things that he's done is that he's had it set in his mind. Like, he's just a petty guy. He doesn't accept things like that. And I feel like he will learn nothing from this. And then come 2024, we'll be peddling the same stuff. And what worries me about that is the fact that with some of the developments we've seen from certain Republicans at state levels, particularly in Pennsylvania, which has had some very worrying developments that I don't know if we'll have time to get to. But a lot of Republicans at the state levels in Arizona are possibly preparing to take measures to, you know, kind of restructure things to where the, you know, the thing bill kind of comes into their favor. And I mean, I feel like it's going to be kind of potentially a gearing up for, you know, things to take place that, you know, when Trump says that, they'll be able to, you know, have, you know, better fights in the court when he pushes back against it, because we'll see the same thing. If he loses, he will still drag. I mean, the playbook, that's the thing that worried me about the whole takeaway from all of his legal battle. It wasn't so much the fact that they were all nonsense and embarrassment to some of the lawyers who were brought before these judges. It's that the playbook has now been laid out for anybody who wants to cry foul in a much closer election. They've now been provided a starting point for just how they can go about doing that. And a lot of these state GOPs, again, Pennsylvania being the one that worries me the most, have already shown that they are willing to get behind that and willing to push back against that. You know, for Trump, you ask how he could potentially come back. He's just going to come back and he's going to do the same thing, because he still believes wholeheartedly in his heart that he won it. And there's absolutely nothing that could change his mind on that subject. And he will continue to peddle that. And he knows that there is still a chunk of that party that is now almost trying to unify behind him or behind his ideals that is willing to go along with it.
Yeah, and we can talk about that briefly. And I'd said some things, and I think you kind of agreed with me way back on like one of our first podcasts where I was like, Trump is destroying the Republican Party. I never thought that it would come to this or be that true. But here we are. You know, there's a strong sense, if you look at like the Gallup polls and things like that, there's a strong sense that within the Republican Party, people are mad. And it's a battleground between the old guard, which I'll say McConnell is part of the old guard, and then the new people who above all things hold Trump to be the savior of the party. And there's a lot of people who are scared to go against Trump because they need his votes. And they need the support from his base to win their election. So again, we are seeing who is so involved in their personal vendetta and self-preservation that they put themselves over their duty. And again, I want to take this time out to say that Mike Pence is still that guy. Like, I know some people might roll their eyes, but Mike Pence he was on the biggest stage at a crossroad where there's a lot of people within that Republican Party who would have tried to overstep the boundaries of their duty in that capacity and probably called a halt to the count or tried to do something like that. And Pence chose not to. He chose to carry out his duty. And again, we know what happened after that, but I don't think he gets enough praise from everybody because he essentially just committed career suicide in front of the entire world for the sake of the country. And people just like, I don't think he got enough praise for it. And, you know, and there's testimony about some of the things that happened while the attack was going on. And obviously we know that President Trump tweeted during the attack and basically was slamming Mike Pence. I'm not sure if he was aware that the attack was going on at the exact time, but there's some argument saying that he did know. But either way, you know, the president's trashing his vice president and the vice president is going into hiding and he's still carrying out his duty. He still, after it was all said and done, came back onto the floor with the other senators and things like that. And they went on ahead and certified the election. But it's just weird to me to see all these contradictions from the party, man. And I think without a doubt, I'm about 90% sure that this Trump era will basically evolve into a faction, either within the Republican Party or separate of the Republican Party. And it might help out liberal candidates more than people want to admit, you know?
It could potentially do that. And don't get me wrong, I do appreciate the fact that Mike Pence was able to do that. But by the same token, it's hard for me to give too much praise to a lot of these guys because you also have to take into consideration that they, as I've said numerous times, this was a making a deal with the devil type situation.
Yeah.
This was somebody where they basically, I mean, Mike Pence unilaterally would never associate with a guy like Trump in his normal life. Trump is antithetical to every religious belief a guy like Mike Pence ends up holding. You know, or at least I would like to think. And, but, you know, Pence and so many of the Republicans who ideologically maybe didn't, you know, necessarily line up with Trump were only too willing to enable all of the bad crap up until that point, you know, up because they were like, look, I just want to get X. In this case, you know, their goals were to, you know, dismantle Obamacare and, you know, make sure they passed the tax cuts that they did. Like, those were the policy goals that they wanted to ultimately achieve. And they were willing to go with whoever could potentially get them in a position that it could be done. And Trump provided them with that position. So they had a choice, either enable and get their stuff done or speak out and, you know, potentially risk some of those goals. And they chose to unite behind them and they enabled them and they continued to enable him right up until the point where they realized, like, I'm really shocked more and more people don't seem to realize this Trump until he put them at risk, like he does with everybody. People who help him, people who don't. The minute you are associated with him in some way, there is a very high likelihood that you are going to have to pay some kind of professional cost to it, to your reputation, or to almost your criminal record.
Yeah, I mean, and we had talked about that before, how he has a very mafia vibe to him where it's not business without some form of payment. Like, you're gonna have to prove your loyalty to him at some point.
And then follow through with whatever he needs you to do. And that's the reason why with so many things that he did, there was always sort of that essentially kind of like a safety barrier for him in between him and those actual consequences in a lot of ways, is that the people who are actually on the ground directly involved with those schemes are the people who are, you know, the ally. Where, you know, for example, like Michael Cohen, who carries out, you know, the orders that, or maybe at least Trump tells him to fix something and he does it, and he does things that are in ethical gray area that border on criminal, or in some cases potentially might actually be criminal, and he's the one who ends up spending time in jail. That's how he does things. And the people who don't want to go into those areas, who have that last shred of integrity. Like the example I always like to give Jeff Sessions, where you go in, like he had to recuse himself from that investigation. He knows ethically as an attorney, that's what you're supposed to do. And that's what he did. And Trump didn't want him to do that. But what Trump was asking him to do was unethical. So the question was going to be, what's your choice? Follow Trump and do the unethical thing and pay the price of your reputation, or don't do the ethical thing and still pay the price of your reputation. The minute the association is made, you are in a not so good web.
Yeah. I mean, that's the vibe I get from him. And, I don't think we're ever going to